Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you today?
How was your weekend?
It was great, well, as usual.
A happy Monday.
Full of kids stuff, you know. Yeah. Happy Monday to you, too.
Thank you. I missed you this weekend.
You
what?
Did? Why?
Boy, that was
were we supposed to be doing something?
I thought we were going to do a weekend show. I thought.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a lot of demand for that.
Lots of demands.
So the first article is entitled, Why You Should Check Your Social Security Estimate. And this is something that our guest does not have to worry about for a while. Because, actually, that's not true. Because
you have to worry about it no matter what your age
right.
is.
Well, it turns out that everyone used to get a statement from Social Security each year.
Mailed to them in snail mail. So it would be U.S. Postal Service would deliver to you a couple months before your birthday a statement that would show your earnings over your entire earning lifetime. And now they've changed to a electronic only, meaning they don't email it to you, but every year you can log online, create an account with Social Security. And it gives you the same statement and it looks the same, except it's now in a PDF form.
But one of the problems is it's only automatically sent to people over 60.
So now I believe it's still mailed by U.S. Postal Mail
right,
to people over 60.
So if you're 30 years old, the last thing you're probably thinking about is Social Security. And probably below that is, I'm going to sign up for a computer password so I can look at it. But it really is important to look at it. First of all, there may be an error. But the second reason is to give you a sense of what your savings rate or what your earnings rate is in terms of what your future benefits would be.
It's a great snapshot to see your earning history and how it's increased over time. It is kind of fun. And I do encourage people to go online because it's a great way to estimate what your retirement benefit will be when you reach full retirement age, and then also at the maximum cap of 70, because it's building that foundation. And though if you're 30 years off from retirement, it won't be 100% accurate, but at least it gives you a baseline.
Well, the next article is an article that I actually learned something. I'm not sure I wanted to learn this, but I thought I was pretty well versed in accounting, but this is a new one on me. And it has to do with the Deutsche Bank proposed merger with Commerce Bank. And it turns out, not surprisingly, that Deutsche Bank has had some problems. And what is known as goodwill, which is the difference between what somebody pays for, goodwill is the difference between what the assets worth in terms of what you paid for it and what it actually is worth, because there may be a value above the actual cash value. So, for example, the Mickey Mouse logo is probably, I'm sure, is on the books of Disney at some huge amount of money. That's called goodwill. It's not a hard asset. And when a company buys another company, there is usually some goodwill, which means that it's a value that's in excess of the equity in the company, and that gets booked on the company's of the acquiring company's balance sheet as excess cost over book purchase, and it doesn't do you any good other than it is an asset that you can use for the benefit of the company over the long term. But because Deutsche Bank has negative goodwill, that is, it has which they call
is that reputation risk?
Well, it's called
negative goodwill.
Well, what they call it is called badwill, and that's when a buyer buys a company for less than the book value, so they're paying under book value, and so you'd think this is really bad. Well, in a way, it's bad if the badwill is reflective of the company's future performance, but the benefit is that the value, the difference, can be amortized up and create a profit using the difference as a way of increasing your earnings. So in the case of this purchase, the acquiring company will get a one-time profit of 16 to 18 billion euros because the company they're buying is in such bad shape. Just mind-boggling.
Wow, that is.
It's a paper profit, but it's a profit that they can book on their books. That took a long time to say that. The next article is by your favorite writer, Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal, who says, he talks about financial advice and financial advisors. And he's talking about the irony here of companies who, like Schwab, who are starting to give away financial advice as part of the services that they provide. And what Jason Zweig says, that to give financial planning away for free while charging for stock transactions is the opposite to the truth. Investment management is a commodity whose market prices drop close to zero, whereas the advice and judgment of a good financial planner can do wonders for your net worth. Financial planning is a service that is worth more, that's worth paying for, while investment ought to be closer to free. So what Jason Schwab is basically saying is that it is probably better for the client, and I know there are different ways of paying a financial advisor, to pay their financial advisor for what in fact is a valuable piece of advice rather than having it wrapped into some brokerage firm where the brokerage firm is going to provide it for nothing. You're just staring at me.
Well,
as a financial advisor, do you agree with that?
Well, you know, at my firm, we have two ways. You can pay a financial planning fee and or an asset under management fee. And I agree that I think financial planning is much more valuable to the individuals than just investment management. And oftentimes people are so focused on the investment management piece that it's difficult for them to take a step back and say, oh, I should pay for financial planning, where really financial planning is the place where you should start.
Well, I think what he's saying really is that, which I think is good for people who are financial planners, he's saying that's a really valuable service as opposed to a transactional commodity service.
Absolutely. And I think that it's important to recognize and make the distinction between a broker and a financial planner. A financial planner is somebody who has gone through comprehensive examination and underlying education to understand where you need to help people identify risks and issues and also create creative solutions to their financial problems that they're facing or hurdles. And whereas a broker, what they have to do is pass a series of regulation examinations, usually the 7 and 66 in today's world. And what that enables them to do is to actually place trades, which is two very different things, as well as very different people that excel at those things.
Yeah, I know. In my day, the Merrill Lynch program, which years ago was, you know, the premier program, basically taught reps to be salespeople. There was no even attempt to make them investment analysts.
And I came along. I grew up at Merrill Lynch as well. That was my first entree into this industry, and it wasn't much better. You know, it was yes, asking questions, but really, the end of the day, it was a you know, the training was a phone book and how to sell somebody something that they may not want.
Yeah, and the final point about this is that, and we've talked about this before, that financial planning is more than picking stocks, which is what presumably the Merrill Lynch people are saying they can do for you. What is really important for financial planning is having a way of really putting together a long-term plan that makes sense for you, whether it's, you know, insurance, whether it's estate planning, income needs.
And it's really helping the end client understand what their goals are. What do they want out of it? When they retire, when they're no longer able to live on their own, do they want to move into a retirement community? Do they want to age in place in their home? Those are all questions that have financial implications just depending upon which choice you'd like to make for yourself.
So why do my kids want to roll me down the hill to Casa de Rinder and I want to age in place where I live?
Well, you know, I think what your kids might be saying is they're going to roll you down the hill. They tell you it's Casa de Rinder, but really it's the beach where you're going to end up.
Excellent point. Excellent point. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we are thrilled to have in the studio with us Kevin Lux, who's the Director of Innovation and Program Development at the Music Academy of the West. Thanks so much for being here, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And so there are lots of exciting things going on at the Music Academy this summer as we kick off the summer festival. But really, what does your title really mean, Director of Innovation and Program Development?
Well, thank you so much for having me, first and foremost. I'm proud to be representing the Music Academy of the West today. And, the Music Academy has been known for so long as a summer music festival, but recently we've started to look into year-round programming projects and programs that can afford some wonderful opportunities throughout the year. And so my role is to help develop some of these programs and to create new ones.
And so let's talk a little bit about where you come from. You're sure. You're a Juilliard trained concert pianist, first off, right?
Right. So I
which is pretty impressive standing alone.
Thank you. Yeah. So I went to the Juilliard School in the early 2000s, and I also have a doctorate in piano. And so my wife, who's a concert violinist, she and I have a piano trio together. And so we concertize throughout the world. And we also started a chamber music organization in Orange County called Chamber Music OC. And so we were very active before I joined the Music Academy team. And I feel like it kind of gave me the right context and the right just exposure to the industry in a way where I could really bring value to the Academy through this role.
And you were named one of Southern California's most influential people by the Orange County Weekly, weren't you?
Yeah, that's very
which
nice.
Which is exciting.
Nice.
So, you know, when you're on an interview, you know, all these things get dug up from your past.
I know, I'm embarrassed now.
And a distinguished 40 Under 40 Alumni Award as well.
Yes, so yeah, those are all, that's very
and
nice.
And now that was from your university that you graduated
from? Stony Brook University.
Excuse me, would you mind talking about me for a minute?
Oh, so sorry. It's back to Neil. Sorry, Kevin. We always got to give Neil a little.
I mean, I feel like, I don't play the piano. I don't play the violin. I don't play anything, actually.
But you're good at math.
No, I'm not good at math. Well, that's a good question.
I was trying to, help you here.
That goes together, doesn't it? Math and music.
That it's been said that that's the case, but I'm not good at math either. So I hope that it
Are you good at the piano, at least?
I hope so.
So let's talk a little bit about, why you're here today, because I think what the Music Academy has done an incredible job under your leadership, really, of creating these new programs that really bring the business side to music. And that's kind of the tie-in with Money Talk of mm-hmm. how do all of these brilliant musicians turn their musical skills into something that they can create a sustainable life career out of mm-hmm. when there are so few chairs in an orchestra and so few orchestras in the world. So tell us a little bit about what's going on at the Music Academy that can help on that entrepreneurship side of things.
Sure. What's really interesting is, I'm a trained classical musician. I've gone to universities, but I've also been to conservatories like Juilliard. And the curriculum is very interesting. What you go through on a day-to-day basis, what you're focused on, you're not thinking too far ahead in terms of what's life going to look like outside of the school, what's going to happen once I graduate. You make certain assumptions about what your career will look like. And I think that it's a bit of a miss, and I think that conservatories are now starting to really address it. But musicians are, it's such a focused a focused vocation. It takes so much time and energy just to be able to play at a high level that we're so focused on that we kind of forget that we're going to have to make a living once we leave school. And so I think that what's so amazing about this role and the Music Academy of the West in general is that they're looking to invest in programs that really our career launching. I think looking at opportunities that not only afford young musicians top flight instrumental training, but also a way to look at the business community, a way to look at themselves as a small business unit, and starting to ask the questions like, how are you going to support yourself once you're out of school? How do you, you know, what's the landscape look like? What are your competitive advantages? Like, very simple questions that I think any business student kind of asks themselves right away. But musicians, it's fairly kind of a new concept. It's something that they may have been dealing with on an intrinsic level, but maybe not so explicitly.
And I think that that's one thing that really sets the Music Academy of the West apart from other summer festival programs, is that you're really on the leading, cutting edge of helping these musicians create careers for themselves that are maybe thinking outside that traditional box. And so now tell us about this, the entrepreneurship and innovation residential at the Music Academy.
Sure. So just as you said, the Academy is investing in these programs that, you know, are career launching. And so one of those programs is the Alumni Enterprise Awards, which is a granting opportunity for our alumni. Any individual alumni from our program that has an innovative idea or a project that they would like funding for, they can apply for this, and we fund it. You know, and up to this year, in the first 2 years, we've afforded $150,000 in project funding, which I think is just incredible. You know, schools aren't doing that. So for a summer festival doing that, it really demonstrates the organization's commitment. And so as part of the Alumni Enterprise Award program, we started this Entrepreneurship and Innovation Business Residential. We thought that it was a great way to provide skill set that these musicians and alumni may not have had previously. We also thought it was a great way to kind of protect the investment, protect them, and also just kind of put them in touch with a community of other people, like-minded individuals and faculty, you know, a global network of individuals that can really help them along the way as they're launching their projects.
And so is it a traditional conference that people in business would normally attend? What are some of the sessions that you're teaching the musicians?
Yeah, so what's interesting is it is like a conference. But as you probably are aware, MBA programs are kind of under assault right now in general. A lot of younger people don't want to fork out the money for a full MBA. They'd rather do executive education sessions or things that are a little bit more short term. And so we are taking that model of a short term residential, 3 to 4 days, but really packing those days with guest faculty and with great artists and individuals in our industry to kind of teach different courses.
And how now, is this a separate? I know you had said that it's for alumni, mm-hmm. so fellows or musicians that have attended the summer program, mm-hmm. and then from there they apply. And do they apply with an entrepreneurial idea, or do they apply just, I want to attend this residential?
Right. So
program.
As part of the Alumni Enterprise Award program, all the people that come to the residential have already received grants from the Alumni Enterprise Awards.
And how many grants do you normally award in a year?
So this year we awarded 7. We had innovation awards and then traditional project funding as well. So those 7 individuals were invited onto the Music Academy campus in March. They could bring their teams along with them, and you know, we gave them readings and all sorts of information beforehand so they knew kind of what to expect. But I think that something that was really surprising throughout the week is just to see how they tackled, you know, business problems. Because I think musicians are naturally good problem solvers. It's kind of what we do, whether it's technical or something a little bit more abstract. We're constantly trying to figure out what is the best method, the best vehicle to be expressive. And so it was interesting to see them taking business problems, whether it was their own or other people's, and again, applying that creativity to try and find creative solutions.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we have in the studio with us Kevin Lex, who's the Director of Innovation and Program at the Music Academy of the West. And we were talking before the break about their new Entrepreneurship and Innovation Residential, which is a few-day or a week-long conference where they're training their musicians, or people who have applied to the entrepreneurship program's granting program, some business skills. And I think that that's really imperative in today's world where, you know, we're starting to move from having one job throughout our careers mm-hmm. to having several different aspects of your job. And so how does one apply? And give us an example of one of the winners.
Sure. So currently this award program is only open to alumni. And so with a over 70-year history, the Music Academy has a rich base to draw from. We've received incredible applications from all over the world, individuals, groups, people that represent larger organizations. This year, we had dozens of applications, again, from all over the world. And the seven that we chose were really, really inspiring. One of my favorite projects was Mr. Bernardo Bermudez, a singer who graduated from the Academy several years ago. And he and his partner, Victoria Robertson, created a children's opera. And basically, they saw the need for engagement with that age group. They saw that music in the schools and, you know, were being cut everywhere. And so they created an original fairy tale opera using tunes from recognized famous arias and created this story and were able to execute this large-scale project where 5,000 kids in San Diego were able to attend at the Balboa Theater to see this opera. And I was able to attend that performance, and I was just blown away. And after the performance, they were so grateful for, you know, to the Academy for the support and also to the residential because they felt like they were put in a better position to execute that project with help from the learnings that they had received from the residential.
Oh, I'm sure that they were able to, you know, better achieve success, mm-hmm. However that is defined for
right.
them, with the business programming. So tell us a little bit about the sessions that you went through at the
sure.
residential.
So, you know, again, we wanted the idea of this residential was to really create a cohesive gel between the individuals that were coming back and to put them in touch with our faculty. And the faculty were really wonderful. They came from Stanford Graduate School of Business and Chapman's Arger School of Business and other just leading professionals in the industry like Wu Han from Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. And so we started the residential with design thinking and business model canvassing, two really interesting ways of looking at problems and looking at, you know, trying to figure out creative solutions to those problems.
And I think, you know, if I can jump in,
sure.
I think that is so important because really to solve a problem is great, but how you get from the problem to the solution is almost more important, especially mm-hmm. if you're in a learning environment as the, who knows what issues and challenges you'll face when you go out and start your program, whatever that may be.
Absolutely. And, you know, musicians are interesting because I don't want to say that they're kind of one track minded, but when we're playing, you know, when we're on stage, we're working so hard to be expressive and to execute at a high level. And at times we forget about the steps that kind of brought us to that point. And so I think answering larger business problems, you know, it requires a construct that's definable. It requires something, steps that people can take towards those goals.
Well, it's kind of like the journey.
Exactly.
You know, life's the journey as opposed to the destination.
Right. And those processes don't really happen from a strategic standpoint, you know, in a musician's life, I think, when we're in school and such. So these are, you know, design thinking and looking at your business model in general. Those are two things that we felt were really important for all of our Alumni Enterprise Award winners. And then at the end of that first day, they pitched their business to their colleagues and to the faculty. And that was pretty incredible because obviously they're all very intelligent. They have wonderful project ideas.
they've already gone through a first exactly. vetting, so
right,
to speak.
Right. And so I think just even from that first day, looking at problems, looking at creative solutions, I felt that the business pitches were already a lot more developed from where they were when they first came in, which was really exciting.
What about
non-musical business? So it looks like there's a focus on helping musicians find a way of monetizing their skill, mm-hmm. but that's a very limited world, mm-hmm. And maybe not the most profitable world. Is
sure.
there any sort of attempt to give them the basic financial literacy to permit them to follow their passion with mm-hmm. their music, but also make a living, doing computer coding someplace else?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, in our second day, we kind of focused on more nitty-gritty subjects, strategy for growth and performance, industry and competitor analysis, and we also did some case studies. We feel like, financial skills in particular are relevant.
They're relevant no matter whether you be a world-class musician or
absolutely.
A high school student that is going to have just a normal 9-to-5 hourly job.
What's amazing to me is that it's not part of the regular curriculum in every school.
In any school, regardless yeah. of where you are or what you're doing. I remember when I was in high school, I think if you were not on the college prep track, mm-hmm. so if your decision, you were going to say you're not going to go to college, mm-hmm. they'd teach you how to balance a checkbook. But financial literacy is so much broader
yes,
and so
absolutely.
Much more important in everybody's day-to-day life, it really is imperative that we start teaching our youth, regardless of what career they want to go into, basic financial literacy.
Well, absolutely. And looking at the current financial climate, with the idea of tariffs and Mexico and China and all these things, and are we going to have a rate hike or not in July, all of these things, they affect our industry so much. We're very sensitive to these things, especially because so many of our organizations in the performing arts sector are nonprofit organizations that are dependent on fundraising and cultivation. And so to not kind of have a pulse on what's happening in the financial world, in just politics in general, and how that affects us, it's a little bit misguided. It's something that I wish we had a little bit more attention
absolutely.
on.
And so, one of your artists in this program got a lot of press in the New York Times. Tell us a little bit about the Box Store and it had this allure and it,
sure.
it got caught up in a lot of really cool programming. And so tell us about it. You'll do a better job than
I will. So I actually went to school with Mr. Evan Shinners from the Juilliard School. Just an incredible artist, an incredible pianist. He had this idea of bringing the music of Bach, which is hundreds of years old, into a modern day context. And so he thought the best way to do that was to rent a storefront in New York City and play Bach basically 24 hours a day. It would either be live performances or previously recorded MIDI recordings that would be played on the piano. And it was such a wild idea and something that we were so attracted to because of the creativity and the originality that we just felt like we had to fund it. And what was interesting working with Evan is that as a concert pianist, he didn't have much experience putting on something like this. And this is a large-scale
project.
Well,
because it takes so much more than just being able to play Bach.
Absolutely.
To rent the store, to figure out how it's going to be staffed, security.
Exactly. There's so many variables. And so we worked with him to develop a 501c3. So now he has his own business where the Bach Store kind of falls under. He hired staff. He secured a 5,000 square foot storefront in New York City, which was incredible. It was a block from Carnegie Hall. And so the work that he put in, we supported him, of course, in getting all these pieces put together. But we were just so proud of him because what came about was a feature in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journal, in the Washington Post. I mean, he was everywhere, kind of as the poster child of what a pop-up store is and how it could be successful. And in turn, hundreds of people walked in daily to hear him playing Bach, and they got to experience the music of Bach in a modern day context, which is exactly what he wanted.
How did he get paid?
Well, the funding that he received helped pay him, but he also set up accounts so people could donate. And now with the 501c3, there was a bit of a tax incentive for individuals to do so. And now he's looking at new cities to have the Bach Store in.
So the business model was to have a storefront where people could then contribute.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the revenue stream.
Right. And he also sold merchandise as well. Yeah.
So what types of merchandise did he sell?
Well, he had stress balls and shirts and bags and such. Kind of traditional merchandise, but it was marketed in a really funky way. And it went really well. I bought a shirt. It's a really,
You're like, I walked out with a shirt. Yeah, I don't even know how that happens.
It's a really good-looking shirt. But he got a lot of attention on social media, and I think that also helped.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology. Mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So, Kevin, the Music Academy also has the Classical Evolution Revolution Conference. Tell us a little bit about that conference.
Well, it's taking place in July, and it's an exciting new component of the Music Academy. This will be actually our third summer having it. And we bring industry experts from all over the world to come and discuss important topics in our industry. Things about cultural diversity, about the landscape of classical music, the future of the arts, you know, really just kind of large-scale topics that we feel like are really important for fellows to hear about. And it's been really engaging and interesting to see how they kind of take this, because again, during the summer, they're very focused on their training and a really nonstop schedule. But it is important to kind of take a step back.
Which, if you haven't checked out the Music Academy's schedule, you should, because when he says nonstop, it really is nonstop.
I mean, performances, masterclasses, lessons every single day. So they're running from rehearsal to performance, and it's crazy. But it is so important, you know, when you have this gathering of great musicians and great faculty and great artists, that we do take a step back and have the opportunity to talk about issues in our industry, because they're going to be stewards of it. You know, once they leave the academy, once they graduate from school, they're going to be responsible for promoting the arts and helping us move it along. So
would you say it's like a 5,000 foot view of the classical musical world?
Absolutely. You know, and we try to select topics that are relevant and are of interest to them. We select artists to come and talk about their careers that have had kind of unconventional careers, you know, really diverse offerings and the way they've kind of put their careers together.
So what do you think the biggest challenge is? Because the average age of the fellows is about 22, 23?
Yeah, it's getting a little bit older, but yes, it's in the 20s.
So it's the early 20s. Mm-hmm. And how do you get the early 20s subset in between all this rehearsing and performing, and that's really what they're driven to do,
right,
to take time out to say, okay, what is the overarching view of this of our industry, and how can we enact change or make sure it succeeds in whatever direction it's headed?
I think in general, awareness has been growing, thank goodness. I think when I was in school, people were blissfully unaware. Everyone kind of made assumptions about what their performance career would look like. But now I think they're seeing more and more great artists, great people that they've, you know, grown up listening to on CDs, you know, doing a lot of different things to create revenue for themselves. It's not just playing. So many musicians teach. You know, there are so few musicians in our industry that only perform. I think that that's a huge luxury, and again, it's the 1%. And so I think it's a great example, because of the kinds of teaching artists and performers that we have coming to the academy. They can see kind of the kind of careers that they're leading and start to, I think, connect the dots that it's going to take a diverse collection of different activities to kind of sustain them.
So with these two really innovative, you know, not to steal from your title of your job, but innovative conferences that are really cutting edge for the music world, mm-hmm, what outcomes are you hoping to achieve?
Well, I hope that it just inspires the next generation of young artists, just as the teaching artists are hoping to do. You know, that through this kind of programming, you know, they experience things, they hear conversations, they meet people that start to broaden their view of what a 21st century musician looks like. And I think that one-track mind, that mentality is changing quite a lot. I think people are starting to recognize that they need a diverse portfolio of activities and skills. And I hope that when they look at the Music Academy, they recognize that we are offering those career-launching opportunities in a variety of different ways.
You know, it's really interesting, the dilemma that you see that the lack of some financial literacy among your graduates is true across the board. There's been recent studies over the last, I guess, seen in the newspapers over the last few weeks about how finally Harvard and Princeton are starting to have financial literacy courses about how to balance your checkbook in their schools, because no matter what the industry that and what the study is, kids coming out of high school have no understanding at all of, I think, only one in five students in a survey were able to understand just basic interest payments, which is really incredible.
Wow. Yeah.
So, financial, the idea, musicians and artists probably are at the bottom of that list because they really don't care. Their passion is so great. Mm-hmm. But it's true for everybody. There needs to be more education about, what the world is like financially.
When I was at Juilliard, I had a very close friend, and he didn't even have a checking account. He just kept cash, and I didn't understand how he could function. And in his 30s...
Well, his father was a gangster.
Yeah, right.
That's why. New York,
New York mobs.
And in his 30s, he just opened his first savings account, which is crazy to me.
Well, because you think about the ramifications of what that means. It means he has no credit.
Right.
And
right.
So if he wanted to purchase a home or even a car, he has no credit.
Absolutely.
So he would have had to have coffee cans of cash saved to buy that car.
What's interesting also through these projects and through these alumni enterprise awards is maybe as individuals they don't have that kind of literacy or they don't have that kind of understanding. But if we can present to them ways to structure their businesses where they can then look at it and say, wait a minute, I should be applying these kinds of things to my own life, like how I'm organizing my finances, how I'm planning for the future, mm-hmm. from retirement to buying a home, the large scale investments that we all have to deal with. I feel like those are things that come out just as you're looking at business models kind of objectively.
Absolutely. And so what? How did you and the other executive members of the Academy select the project and innovation winners? I'm sure you must have gotten.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful.
Hundreds of applications.
And what's great about the applications, every one of them had merit. Every one of them, they were all interesting. They all came from people of varying ages. Actually, one of our winners was an Academy alum from 1986. So it was just so cool to see people.
Almost one of your contemporaries, Neil.
I don't play the piano, as I said before.
But it was a great process. Our team went through the applications. We scored them. We had live interviews, and then we passed them along to our distinguished committee that also looked at them, our national advisory committee. And so we had a lot of different input from leading industry professionals, from our own team. And so we felt really good about our landing point.
And how is the Academy fundraising to provide these awards?
What's amazing is, I think our team is so competent and so accomplished in terms of how they fundraise. I think that our donor base is pretty passionate about this. I mean, they're not just passionate about hearing great music. They're passionate about seeing these fellows and these alums going on to do great things, to launch their own projects and initiatives and be successful. So I think it's kind of an easy sell in a lot of ways, because we're not just investing in their career as instrumentalists, we're investing in them making an impact in their own communities, which will ultimately create a better network and world of artists and art lovers.
Absolutely. And so, I can't help but to point out Claire Chase, who was one of the Mosier guest artists this year in the festival, because she truly, is an emblem of being so creative.
Absolutely.
And just taking her. She's a flautist, mm-hmm. and she does crazy things.
She does crazy things. And she started the International Contemporary Ensemble, which is one of the most important contemporary music ensembles on the planet. So she's an entrepreneur. She's a wonderful performer. But she's such a great advocate for the arts and what the arts can be. And I think she's a great example to all of our students of what an unconventional career looks like. That's why we're actually hosting her.
And if you get an opportunity to YouTube her performance, it's she dresses up as a chicken or a lamb, right?
It's a goat.
A goat. And it's totally fascinating, and she is so incredibly talented.
It's amazing. it's amazing stuff, and she's actually giving that performance at the Music Academy. So I'm
Is that the performance we're getting?
Yeah, she's
Oh, great.
Well, you know what? I sometimes dress up like a goat, also.
Do you play the flute also?
But no one watches your YouTube channel.
No, I never thought of that. Maybe I should put it on YouTube. Maybe people would like that. I think it's time for a break. Don't you think?
I do.
You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be back with our final segment. Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Kevin Lux, who's the Director of Innovation and Program Development of the Music Academy of the West. And, you know, given that I am on the board of the Music Academy, yes, I can't let you go before we talk about our program here in Santa Barbara that is new. So please share with us some details about Sing.
The Sing program is something I'm just so proud of. I'm proud of the Music Academy. I'm proud of our community for embracing it. We conducted some research and realized that school-age kids don't really have access to choral arts here in Santa Barbara. It's such a low barrier to entry. Everyone has a voice. And
although you haven't heard Neil sing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And so we created this program in collaboration with the Santa Barbara County Education Office to offer free after-school choral training. And we're using a really interesting model. We're in three different sites currently, Adams, Franklin, and Canalino Elementary Schools. And we've hired two fantastic choral directors, Christine Hollinger and Daniel Newman Lessler. They rotate throughout the sites during the week. And kids from all different area schools come to those three sites to rehearse in these little segments. And then they all come together at the Music Academy once a month for all choir rehearsals. And we have kids from 11 different schools, and they sound fantastic. It's amazing to see them come together.
The age group is young. It's second grade through...
through sixth grade right now. And I think one of the most amazing things is just seeing them come together, seeing them, you know, take really complex music and kind of simplify it and make it work for them. They're singing in all these different languages. Everything is memorized. But more than anything, it's an opportunity for them to explore their own cultural history, you know, through music, which I think is really special.
I think the fun for me has been watching their emotion come through.
Oh, absolutely.
Of these children who have never heard this type of music before and just feels so passionately.
Yeah, I mean, none of these kids have had any music training previous to this. And so, you know, to hear them actually singing and it sounds great, it's such an amazing surprise, but it's also so encouraging and inspiring because I feel like, you know, the next great singer could be in the batch of kids that we have, or the next great music lover or philanthropist that believes in the arts. And so it's been an amazing journey. It's only 9 months old, this program. They're having their first public performances in a few weeks, and so we're so excited to be having them.
So if I were in the program, mm-hmm. I would be asking you a question. I would say, you know, you have a full-time job, mm-hmm. and you're a musician that, as I understand it, requires, you know, 30 hours a day of practice in order to maintain your expertise. So how do you balance that? Because it'd be a good question for someone who wants to concentrate on their music but also wants to be able to eat.
Of course.
So how do you balance that?
Carefully. You know, it's really tricky. I think luckily I don't personally need a lot of maintenance in terms of practicing, keeping up. Like, my hands feel great. I'm in shape as a pianist. And so the ensemble that I'm in, Trio Celeste, we play traditional piano trios and some new music, but it's music that we've played a lot. We've toured all over the world with it, and so it doesn't take a lot of maintenance to keep it up. I do practice every day. I also teach on the weekends. I have some really fantastic students who've also gotten into Juilliard and some wonderful programs. I'm very proud of them. But it's kind of, I mean, musicians are so used to juggling so many different projects, and what I'm doing at the Music Academy is so separate from my performing life that I just love it. It's such a great balance, and it informs each segment kind of informs the other.
So what's next for you and the Academy? Any new programs on the horizon?
We have some new ideas. I'm not at liberty to say yet. But maybe I can come back to share them when they're here. But we're very, very excited about the direction of the SING program, of the Alumni Enterprise Awards, and, of course, the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Residential.
Well, this is great because when I moved here 20 years ago, the big thing about Music Academy was May Madness. And now things have really gotten much more sophisticated. Kevin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
for all you do. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.